Hello and welcome. I'm Tom Heck, president and founder of the International Association of Teamwork Facilitators. Today is Thursday, May 7th, 2015. The time is 1:02 p.m. Eastern, and you have dialed into the monthly IATF visiting faculty member call. And our guest today is Bernie DeCoven, who I will introduce here officially in a second. Today's call does include the opportunity to use a participant chat window. And Bernie and I'm going to be mostly watching this, but Bernie, I can see, is already typing in. If you are on the web, you'll be able to participate in the chat. And if you are wondering, if you're on a phone right now and you want to jump over to the chat, you can do so by navigating to uberconference.com/Tom Heck. uberconference.com/Tom Heck. And then there's a little icon on the right-hand column over there that will allow you to participate in the chat. And we've already started that. So just briefly about the IATF, we exist to provide teaching tools and community to support the evolution of team consciousness. And on lots of different regards. And today I am absolutely excited to have Bernie DeCoven, who has been an enduring, has an enduring commitment to liberate playfulness. So if you are interested in play and joy and fun and learning how to incorporate that and what it means to teams and organizations, you're in the right place, because Bernie has spent the last 45 years developing games, collecting games, teaching play to those who've forgotten it, organizing play events, including massive ones, and generally doing his bit to increase the level of fun in the universe or make people more aware of it. He's worked in the development of the Lego game system, as well as designed games for Ideal Toy Company, Children's Television Workshop, Mattel Toys, CBS Software, automated simulations, and much more. And let's see here. I'm going to, let's see, I hear a little noise in the background. And then I'm going to take Bernie and make sure that he is able to talk. And let's see here. Bernie, are you able to talk now? Oh, I might have just accidentally.
How's this?
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Now I can hear you. So good, good. So and for those of you who've been around for a while and seen books and know about the New Games Movement, which was one of my very first books back in the day when I first learned about this work, Bernie was right at the epicenter of that. So Bernie, I want to welcome you to today's call.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, Bernie, I know that you have a few slides to share with us today, and we're going to be exploring this topic that you talked about called co-liberation, and I've read a long article that you have shared with me about that, and we're going to be sharing that with everyone else here. And by the way, for everyone else who's interested, we're going to be participating in a chat window in the right-hand side and of the webcast that's going on right now. And if you're on the web, you'll be able to also see Bernie's slides here. And Bernie, are you able to start sharing your very first slide?
I thought I was sharing. I'm not.
Oh, sure. Maybe you are already doing that. For those of you who are in the chat, if you would let us know if you're able to see the window that or Bernie's slides. If you could just say yes or no, you can see the slides. And Bernie, I just want to, let's see here. There we go. Okay. All right, now I see your slides there, Bernie. So I'd like to start off, maybe before you start in with your slides here today, if we're going to be talking about play and fun and games, and I have a few questions for you as we move through this interview, but I'd like you to maybe start with the idea of play and why it's important for those of us to understand who are working with teams, and because this is the International Association of Teamwork Facilitators, and as it turns out, I'm a big believer in games and using games to teach with as a metaphor. But why is playfulness and play important in our world today, both in business and maybe personally at home?
Well, I can best answer that. Tell me if I get too long here, because that's a deep question, Tom. There's two different phenomena, or there's play and there's playfulness. And then there's a third, which you might call playful play. The idea of what play does for people, especially when people are playing playfully together, is to create community. You're playing playfully, which means that the focus is really not so much on winning or on even on the rules. The focus is on having a good time together, having fun, sharing that experience. And because you're sharing that experience, you begin sharing your whole relationship. It solidifies, it creates community and enhances it. So you can imagine what a powerful tool that is for any kind of team building, that once you get people to play together, and especially if you can get them to play playfully, you begin to create a bond between them all. A playfulness itself is a slightly different animal, because playfulness can exist outside of games. It's something outside of the kinds of things that you think about playing. Playfulness can be part of your attitude and your way of presenting yourself and your way of reaching out into the world. And so that's kind of a transcendent quality. And it's one that is extremely powerful in terms of providing healthy and healing relationships, in terms of people being able to maintain a good relationship, continue working together when things are stressful. I'm sure you can understand what I'm talking about.
Well, here's a real life encounter I had, and then I'd like to jump into your slides. But so I once met with a company here in North Carolina that's works on software development, and the company had massive growth over the course of 5 years. It started with two people and grew to 200, and they spent very little time investing in their team. But when they did invest in the team development, what the owner did was he would do things like take everybody out whitewater rafting, and that might happen once every 2 years or once every 18 months, or do something like that. So it was playful, and yet he wasn't getting the results that he wanted out of that experience. He wasn't building community. He was sort of assuming that that somehow going whitewater rafting would bring everybody together. So what was he missing?
Well, first of all, if he was only doing it once a year or once every 2 years, that's already an issue, because if you want to be playful, if you want to create community, it has to be pretty much something that you're constantly doing in one way or another. Mm-hmm. You really have to support and enforce that. As a manager or as a CEO, if you're talking about creating a playful community or community itself, you need to be able to participate in that community whenever you possibly can. You need to maintain a certain amount of playfulness in your meetings, to maintain a certain amount of playfulness in your relationships to the other players, to the other people in your work. Maintain it in terms of your whole approach to your job, the significance of your organization.
So it's really, I think that this is the important piece I want folks to hear about your work, is that you're suggesting this is not just something that we do every once in a while. And I read something on the web that you believe that humans are built Humans are designed to play.
And absolutely. Yet,
I'm going to guess that most people, when they think of play, it's not associated with work, right? That's something that if we're going to do it, it's separate from, you know, the 9 to 5, if you will.
Well, that's true, but it's a very unfortunate misperception, because when work is really good, when it's effective, when we feel really engaged, it's very much fun. It's almost, in fact, I would say it's indistinguishable from play, except that it might be a kind of a more focused form of play. I mean, when you think about, for example, let's say you're in a meeting, but this is what you might call a good meeting. And just think about the characteristics of that relationship while you are in that good meeting. You're talking, and as you're talking, you say something, and you really feel that people are listening to you. And you're listening to, you almost kind of like listening to them listen. And as you talk, you start feeling more and more intelligent, you know, like, because people are listening, you can feel people listening. And that means that there's been a relationship, a connection to the community of people who are there, that's the one that later on we'll discuss a little bit more fully, because that's the one I call a co-liberating relationship. Each Yes. person, each participant in that meeting is helping the other person feel freer to do the work, to be themselves, to engage with the other persons.
So let's start. That's a great distinction. And it leads into this idea of co-liberation.
Can't talk about that yet. I'm sorry. Not ready
for it. Oops. Sorry about that. So let's start with your slides. I'm actually looking at your screen now, your slide deck, and it says the facilitation of playfulness.
Yes. And that's, I wrote that down because I thought there were two key points. One is we're talking about facilitating, and the other, the focus is on playfulness. And again, playfulness is a slightly different animal than play. As we said before, or I said, playfulness is an attitudinal thing, and play is a verb. So let me go to the next slide here so I can show you what I would like to talk about. This is a quote from a Patrick Bateson in a book called Play, Playfulness, Creativity, and Innovation. Can you see that?
I can, yes.
And it says, playfulness is what makes play fun. And I love that little quote because it's such a simple way of looking at things. And yet it really does talk about, describe, capture the essence of what playfulness does when you are playing. If you are playing, you can be playing and being very unplayful. I mean, if you're playing football or baseball, there's very little playfulness going on. There's very careful focus on winning and on performing at your very best. The level of teamwork that's required is one that, boy, if you break it, you're just to complete. If your attention isn't there, if you make a mistake, you feel like you've let down the whole team. Pressure is enormous. On the other hand, if you think of an informal game of baseball, where you guys are just, it's a bunch of people. In fact, there might be a couple of kids out there. There might be somebody my age, which is very old. And the only goal there is to play something baseball-like. And so, all right, so you're not playing by the exact rules. So, you know, you play, all right, so 10 strikes and you're out. Or I'll roll the ball at you and you can just kick it with your, oh, that's kickball, as a matter of fact. Or you can just throw out the ball yourself and we'll all have to turn our backs until you're ready. And then, you know, just to make the game fun for everybody, to make everybody feel more included. It's inclusive play is what that's called. And that's a very different experience. That's That's the playful play. That's really an experience that focuses on that. The purpose of it is to have fun together, which means to create and maintain an experience of play community. And I believe that the play community experience is the thing that really creates and sustains teamwork.
And so, Bernie, I just want to jump in that someone wrote that they weren't able to see the slides. If you mouse over the bottom of your screen and you're on the web right now at uberconference.com/TomHeck, you should be able to click on the screen at the bottom and or on an icon at the bottom and view the slides. And we're going to be providing the slide deck for you afterwards, and we can describe the slides so as we go through in case you just and if you're just on the audio, for example, on your phone. And just want to interject that I've added three website links that Bernie will go into more later. But if you're curious, I've added them into the chat window, and you can join the chat over on the right-hand column of the website, uberconference.com/TomHeck. So I want to go back to this idea of playfulness and inclusivity. So that seems to me that how you would define your early work in the new games movement. Is that correct? Is that what you were trying to do?
That was very much what New Games was all about. You know, it wasn't so much, we really didn't care that much about the games. We cared about the people who were playing the games. And our goal was not to see who won or who lost or to keep score. Our goal was to get everybody involved. And the first couple of new games tournaments, there were like thousands of people that came, and there were little kids, and there were people of various labels, you know, whether they were handicapped or blind or mentally challenged or whatever, you old or young. And it was important if this we were going to succeed at all, that they all can play. They all can play. A really good case in point, it kind of has entered into the New Games Apocrypha, is one of the first, there was a game that we played of tug of war. And it was, we had this extremely thick rope, you know, like the kind of rope that you would moor a barge with. And we got people to line up on both sides of the rope. And we started a game of tug of war. And then during the game, what happened was that if one of us happened to be on the rope and pulling with it, of course, we pulled with the people. We never separated ourselves from the community. We were always kind of playing with them. That if one of us discovered that we were on the winning side and we were kind of pulling, pulling the other team over, we would let go of the rope and run to the other side. And pretty soon everybody was doing that. And we could just kind of sit back and watch this amazing thing unfold of people just enjoying the conflict, you know, and laughing. And that created such a freedom and an empowerment. Another thing was that we always had a choice of games. So if you didn't want to play there was something else to play. And that gave you the freedom to quit. And because play is basically a voluntary activity. And see, this is one of the things that maybe that story that you told, Tom, about the manager who took his people out rafting.
Right.
I wonder if that was a compulsory activity.
It was a compulsory activity.
See, there you go. As soon as you can't play, you can't create a sense of play and playfulness if it's something that you have to do.
But how do you square that with someone who's trying to lead a team in a business or in a classroom for that matter? Because we've got, I'm sure, some teachers on here who have kids who are obliged to sit in their classroom.
Well, you know, you do whatever you can to promote choices. And I know that when I teach people how to facilitate playfulness, one of the things that I do is that I start out with quitting practice. And I tell them, look, as soon as you feel that you don't want to play, just quit and come back in when you feel like you want to play again. And people really seem to understand that very clearly. And it helps me as a facilitator, because I know that the people who are playing are there because they want to play. If you are worried about whether people really want to play and you're trying to lead a game, you'll go crazy, because you start putting out so much energy, and much of it is going to be negative because you're so tense about, this guy doesn't look like he's having enough fun. What should I do? Oh, I must be doing something wrong. Oh, I'll invite him in. I'll tell him, come on, I'll put him on the back. But then somebody else is not playing it. Oh, it's just going to. Yes. So, now, if you're in a situation where, you know, I hate to say this, but there are certain environments in which it's impossible to get people to play, because the structure of the environment is such, is so coercive, and it leaves people such little room. You know, I remember when I was teaching, the basic thing, the principal used to come around, and there were two criteria that he had for evaluating my teaching ability. Were all my shades drawn to the same level? And two,
the shades in your room?
Yes.
The blinds, you mean?
The blinds, right. That proved to them that I was in control. And the other, which is another thing about you know, that whole thing about you being in control rather than sharing control with your students. That's it. And the other thing was my room noisy? And if it was noisy, I was being a bad teacher. And yet, as any teacher can tell you, when the room is noisy, it usually means that the kids are really deeply involved in what's going on. It also could mean that it's chaotic and you're about to get seriously hurt. But other than that, you know, they're working on assignment, they're doing something, they're talking to each other, they're learning from each other, they're sharing with each other. It's just like what a good conference is like. I could talk about that later.
Well, so I don't want to interrupt the flow of your slide deck too much, but a slight tangent here. But I'm back looking at your slide of playfulness is what makes play fun.
Yes.
So should we move on to the third?
Are we ready to continue? Yes, of course.
Yes. Okay.
Every single slide is important. Okay. one of the things that I like to do is, I'm kind of a game designer. I've done a lot of design. Whenever possible, I like to make up games that invite playfulness. And a lot of those kind of games that invite playfulness have a certain creativity component. They encourage people to make things up or to pretend something. And there's what you see on the slide is a game called There Must Be a Good Reason. I thought those of us who are in the chat mode might try to play this together. We'll do this as an experiment, and if you can't do it, I'll feel extremely depressed and disappointed personally in you. So okay, yes, you do not have to play. And it doesn't mean anything about you whether you play or not. So this game started, my wife was telling me about something she does when she's in traffic. She's driving in the car, this is like in Los Angeles, so you know, you're driving on these freeways. And when the actual freeway is moving, you get very excited and focused about keeping on moving. When she got very frequently, somebody would just kind of pass her and pull right over in front of her. So she decided to play this game with herself, where she would try to figure out good reasons for this person behaving like that.
Yes.
So, like, she was, oh my gosh, that poor guy, he must really be have to go to the bathroom. Wow, I bet maybe his wife is a hospital trying to deliver a baby and called him, said, you must come. And he's been stuck in traffic. And the doctor called and said, where are you? And so he's just like driving himself crazy trying to get it. So that's the idea. There must be a good reason. Try to figure out as many possible good reasons for somebody doing something that basically is really awful. So that's a game. And I invite you to try playing it with me. Let's set up. Tom, can you think of some good situation where somebody does something rude?
How about this one? Someone pulls right into, this is another car example, but happened to me recently. I thought I was lined up to get a parking spot.
I knew you were going to say that. I could just,
it was a very full parking lot. Okay. It's not a matter. What I'm talking about is I didn't want to walk the distance. It was that the parking spaces were used up and I had been waiting patiently. And because of the way the person pulled out, I had to wait longer. I was in the wrong position to take it compared to somebody else who had just all of a sudden drove up and just pulled right in.
Yes.
So, okay.
Yes.
I was a little frustrated, Bernie.
A little frustrated. Yes. Yes. That's when your eyes started turning red and you started drooling, I believe.
That wasn't you that pulled in.
Okay. So let us brainstorm here. You've heard of brainstorming, you team people. Let's brainstorm any thought that you had about what might have been, what could you possibly attribute to that guy who took your parking space that was a good reason for him to do that? And we'll type it into the chat window.
Oh, I love this. Bob says there was glass all over the spot. The parking space, and the person didn't want me to damage my tires.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And then Brian Capron at UNC Charlotte says they must have been late for an 85th birthday party and needed a gift. Love it. Yes. And then let's see. Brian says they have been waiting for hours for that spot because they have OCD and must park there every day.
OCD, tough.
Yeah. So, I wouldn't want to get in front of somebody with OCD that has to get to that spot.
Really?
So, I would see this as reframing a situation. That's language that I would use, but I like the way that you have playfully reframing. Sounds sort of technical, but the way that you've languaged this, there must be a good reason.
Exactly.
Is an easier way, a funner way. Is funner such a word? A more playful way to begin using the same idea.
Yes. And it's kind of, you know, if you play this with people and you play it, you know, long enough so that everybody can really get involved in it and they start, because you can really think of hundreds of reasons for that, for some awful behavior. And it begins to be something that people can, like a kind of meditation, something that they can play by themselves when they're in the shopping line or waiting for something to happen, or in a meeting. It must be a good reason this meeting is taking so long. You know, it empowers people, and it does it in a playful way. And I think that's the key, is that you can really take some things in life that are really important to do, really, really valuable, really profound personal assets for you to develop, and you can and you can approach playfully. And by approaching them playfully, it creates a sense of freedom that you you enjoy yourself more, you engage more fully, you feel you can connect to other people more easily.
You know, I was just thinking of a practical way to use this skill. I have several friends who are in the service industry, and one just sold a business, a bakery, but I've heard others say this, and they say, boy, it's really hard sometimes to be in the service industry because you have to deal with people that can sometimes be really rude.
Yeah.
And I could see someone who's, you know, a small business or for that matter, a large business that teaches this playful way to look at responding to a difficult situation.
Yeah.
When someone comes in and is perhaps rude ordering their coffee. There must be a good reason.
Yep. It's kind of like an inner one-upping, you know, because right. you don't let yourself get crazy because of somebody's misbehavior or somebody's insensitivity. You kind of you use it as an excuse on your internal dialogue to have some fun with the whole idea of the whole experience.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So that's called There Must Be a Good Reason. There's also, on the slide, you'll see that there's a link to a description of this of that on my website, deepfun.com. Okay, the next slide, this is kind of complex. There's a man named Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. I wouldn't be surprised if everybody knows who he is, and nobody knows how to pronounce his name. So I just thought I would do that to make you feel Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, who is the guy who developed the concept of flow. And the next couple of slides are all kind of connected to this idea. So what he discovered is that there's a connection between our abilities to do something and our desire to seek out a challenge.
Okay.
We like to be challenged because it engages us. We don't like to be too challenged because if we're too challenged, we start getting anxious because we start worrying about our performance or how people are going to look at us or whatever. When we're not challenged enough, well, then we can't really engage. We don't feel our abilities are being taken advantage of, and we start getting bored. And between those two states of boredom and anxiety, when the challenge is just maybe a tad greater than our abilities or a little bit less than our abilities, we get into a state that we call flow. And this flow is this amazing condition where we lose track of time. We feel very much attuned to the environment and become very responsive. The inner dialogue that we have all the time with ourselves about being not good enough or why am I doing this or how come that's happening disappears and you become totally focused. This is the reason why Csikszentmihalyi started this inquiry was because he was really wondering why people do things like climb mountains and go bungee jumping and skydiving. Because they're doing something that is without extrinsic motivation or reward or recognition for the most part. They're doing something really just for the fun of it. That's their only reward is the fun of the experience.
Right.
And yet they're willing to risk their lives to have that experience. So he started thinking about flow. He discovered that flow is something that takes place in the workplace. It takes place in education. It takes place in the sciences. It takes place in the arts. That feeling of being totally engaged, of losing track of time. And it's a very neat kind of oversimplification that about if you just look at the relationship between the challenge you're facing and the abilities that you wish to engage or that you have access to, you can see that that challenge that you really want to try to, the only thing that you can really mitigate is the challenge itself. You can't really mitigate your abilities because those are your abilities. But you can look at the challenge and you can say, you know, I think I need to invest more in this so that I feel more challenged, or I think I need to pull back a little bit because I'm getting crazy. So that's the message of this idea of flow. Now I'm going to go to my next slide, ladies and gentlemen. And in this slide, you see two pretty pictures. And one says the gay community and the other says the play community. And I wanted to make this distinction because the play community is different than the game community. In the game community, it's like, okay, so you want to play baseball with me? Let's see how good of a player you are. If you're not good enough, well then, go find another game because I don't want you on my team. So, and you all know what that experience is like. Well, yes. In a play community, it doesn't matter. So here's what I wrote, which is very pithy. Would you like to read it because it's so beautiful, Tom?
The players decide, and this is the play community. The players decide if the game is fun enough to play. If not, they change the game.
Whereas in the game community, the rules and the officials decide if the players are good enough to play. And if not, they change the players.
And Chris Cavert, our mutual friend, is on the line with us. And Chris was visiting me recently, and we talked about, this reminds me of Calvin and Hobbes. You remember the game Calvin Ball?
Yeah. Good connection.
For those of you who are listening and know Calvin and Hobbes, if you Google Calvin Ball, it is the craziest, wackiest game from the comic strip, because the two of them, Calvin and Hobbes, will change the rules to have more fun. That's what the goal is.
So what's the message of it? Is that we would like the workplace to be somehow a good balance between the game community and the play community. We need to empower the workers, people who are engaged in some productive activity, to change the rules and to change the rules so that everybody who is there can become engaged. We need to empower them so that they can have some control over the degree of challenge that they're facing, even when things are very high pressure. But at the same time, like the game community, we want them to stay focused, you know, on keep your eyes on the prize, as they say. So that's something that we could do by playing games in such a way like that tug of war story, where we're still playing tug of war, but the idea of one side having to win is kind of removed for a while. Next slide. At last, we see the concept of cooperation. Is anybody with me looking at that slide or not?
I'm able to see it, yes. And I'm hoping that folks here, you might want to describe this also for the recording. Sandra is able to see this. I see Sandra King. Thank you, Sandra. But for just the recording, maybe you could describe what
we're looking at. Well, it's in red and black and blue and gray. Any further questions? Okay, I'm sorry.
That was perfect.
Thank you. Okay. So this is very much like the flow diagram, where you have two axes. The whole vertical one points to a thing called we at the end, W-E, and written inside of it is the word engagement. The horizontal one at the bottom points to the word me, And that also talks about engagement. And the idea here is like in the idea of this is a chart that talks about really the experience of community and of getting to that point in community where people are feeling co-liberated, where your engagement, your sense of involvement and of being there is one that creates an environment for other people to also feel more engaged. That your goal is really to be together in community with that's the purpose, is you want to be to create a community, to maintain a community that stays very focused in such a way that you don't want people to be too focused on the we part of the community, because if they get too focused on we, they kind of forget themselves, their own needs. They kind of figure they have to sacrifice their own needs. And that you get the group mind, you get conformity. You got kind of a loss of identity and eventually a loss of personal engagement. On the other hand, you don't want them to get too focused on that me part, because the more focused they are on the me part, the more they begin to feel alienated from the community. But there's a balance between the two when the person is deeply engaged in his own needs and the community is deeply engaged in the person's needs, because the we is really a collection of all the people who are involved. The we is the plural of me. So like in the flow chart, on the one side you have conformity, which is towards the we, on the other side you have alienation. When you are in the middle of that chart, when you are in flow, you are in group flow, you are experiencing something that I call co-liberation. Now, co-liberation is a really amazing phenomenon, and the more you kind of think about it, the more you begin to observe it as a power in your own life. A good relationship is very co-liberative. If you are blessed and have a long marriage, you discover how really each person in the marriage is working towards the other person feeling more free to be them. It's like when the focus of the collective is on the freedom of the individual to pursue his own desires. And you can see that in a good teamwork, you pretty much have that same kind of thing. I believe that teamwork that is designed so that it's at the teamwork becomes the most important thing is more something that you would see in the military, where people are marching or fighting fighting against an enemy, where the individual is willing to subjugate himself to the success of the group. So the we becomes much more important. But that's very unsustainable. And you can't, it's unfortunate that so many of the business people who envision the nature of business and how organizations should be use sports metaphors. Because most sports are based on people acting more as we than as me, more in that state of conformity. And I don't think that you get sustainable performance when you do that. You can, you have to provide a lot of extrinsic motivation, like salary and fame and trophies, in order for people to sustain that. You can't get that really in the business world. In the business world, you really have to create a community where the people are supporting each, where the focus is on people supporting each other and raising each other's sense of the freedom to be who they are, to do their work at their best. Hence the concept of co-liberation, being each other.
So I can ask a clarifying question here, Bernie. In practice, let's say that I'm working with a group of teachers, which was not the last workshop I led with a group of teachers, and not the entire staff, but a handful, a section, a portion of the staff at a high school. And would you say that the goal of anybody who is working with a group of people like these teachers, would you want them to move or to become co-liberated? Is that what you seek to do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would want them.
Can a team, in your estimation, ever get to, you know, the stages of group development and what a form, storm, norm, perform, and that whole, and there are other models, but in your belief, can a team ever become high performing if they don't achieve co-liberation?
They can have moments of high performance, but then they just burn out.
I see.
I believe that for them to sustain a relationship, sustain a high performance, it's something that they need to be able to rely on each other, to support each other, and to have enough understanding of their relationship so they can change the rules if necessary. And enough understanding of the nature of rules so they can perceive them. Like, you know, do you always have to be quiet? Is it illegal to laugh? Do you really need to dress that particular way? Are you allowed to touch people? Is that all right? You know, all these kinds of things that are assumptions need to be tested out. And that the only way that can be tested out is if there's the people have established a community that focuses on the idea of a community that's there to serve the needs of the individual.
Okay. Well, I see that we're about 12 minutes from the top of the hour. We don't have necessarily a hard stop, but I do want to honor everyone else who is on the call. I want to make sure we get through this material and maybe even have an opportunity for some dialogue with folks or being able to ask some questions. And there is a question from Australia that someone wrote in advance because it was 3 a.m. where this person lives.
Okay.
So I wonder if we should just keep moving through and then offer an opportunity for questions.
Okay. So keep on top of me, Tom, if I get too loquacious.
Okay.
All right. I wanted to tell you another guy. We talked about Mahai, and I want to talk to you about a guy named Muska Mosten. Muska Mosten, Muska Mosston, was a physical educator. Is that the right how you say it? He was like a gym teacher.
Yeah.
And he was looking at what's going on in the gym, and he saw that it didn't really engage people. It was not in the kind of environment that certainly was not co-liberating. It was the kids who were good athletes and performed well turned out to be like in one group, and they enjoy their experience, and the kids who weren't hated their experience. They felt isolated, and they spent most of the time sitting out. And he was trying to create a different approach to physical education. So he created his model, which he called later, I think, the slanted rope theory. But basically he said, look, think of the high bar exercise. You know how they have that, or high jump, really, the high jump exercise, where you put a bar across two supports and you ask people to jump over it. And you have everybody line up. This is the typical physical education program. I'm sure you've experienced it in your life, where yeah. Everybody lines up and they jump over the bar, and one or two things can happen. Either you succeed or you miss. If you miss, you go into kind of like the pool of shame, you know, you and all the other people who've missed, because you're out. And you spend the rest of the time watching other people succeed, which, of course, helps you focus on your failure. If you succeed, however, Then you join the pool of victors temporarily, of course. And what happens then is that the physical educator raises the bar, so to speak. So what goes on in this whole process is that you get fewer and fewer winners and more losers, which seems to be the antithesis of what you want to have happen in the gym. You want people to feel empowered, to play, to try something, to challenge themselves. And there's no access for them. It's either you succeed or you fail, and eventually everybody has to fail. So what he did is he tried the same exercise, but he slanted the high bar. He slanted it so that if you try to jump over where it was lowest, you could probably just walk from one side to the other. Whereas where it was highest, you had to be some kind of super athlete to climb over, to jump over that.
Right.
He let the kids choose where they wanted to jump. In other words, he gave the kids the chance to determine their own challenge. They were the ones, so they felt that they were the masters of this situation. Each child, when they just, because they could adjust, just like in the flow thing, they could adjust the challenge to their perceived abilities. And he watched the kids play. And most gym teachers would say, "I know exactly what's going to happen. Everybody's going to go over the low end, and it's going to be a total failure." And that is the opposite of what happens, is kids consistently challenge themselves. Kids who showed no athletic ability or interest would challenge themselves more and move up the rope than they had ever before done. So that model of the slanted rope is a very profound model that we can use to understand how we can facilitate that experience of the play community in any kind of environment. That if
It
we can.
seems, Bernie, that this method of working with kids or people in general requires one to trust people.
Yes.
That I'm reminded of a business I read about it. I think it's on the West Coast, and I don't remember, but they're sort of I mean they're a thriving company, and it's not Google, but it's a much smaller tech sort of company, and they don't have vacation, and nor do
No.
they have hours, right? All
Yeah.
they have is, here's what we would like to do as an organization, and they sort of collectively work on that, and then you decide how you're going to contribute to that. Like
And
if
it's amazing. It's amazing what happens as a result of that when people are given the sense of trust and freedom,
Yes.
and a real responsibility for determining their own course, that they actually work harder and work better and put more of themselves into it.
Yes.
Unfortunately, so there are so many settings where people don't have that opportunity. There's so many. It's like the old school. It's based on not on trust but on fear. And I
Yes.
think it's the manner. It's the people who are in a position in a hierarchy of feeling that they're responsible for the team's success. That they are constantly afraid that something they're doing is going to get in the way of their team's success. So that creates an environment of mistrust because they're basically making the assumption that unless people are constantly motivated, unless we have performance reviews, unless we have standings and charts and ways of showing who's the best person and celebrating the best performer, people are just going to do their worst job possible. And it's
Yes.
not true. It's not true. People love to be engaged, just like they like for the same thing that they like to that they are willing to risk their lives for. So,
Well,
slanted
and
rope theory. Go
so
ahead.
keep going. Yeah, I was going to say that I want to make sure we have an opportunity to answer a few questions as we get closer to the top here. And there might be one person at least who's not muted, and I hesitate to jump back to the screen right now to make sure folks are muted. But if everybody can just remain quiet or at least mute your phone on your side, I know we're almost at the end with our slides here.
Yeah, I'm speeding through this. Okay. if we had time, I was going to play another game with you, and this is the game called Endless Blessings, and it's like that other game. And I just wanted you to let me just tell you about it really quickly. The I bet you can figure it out already. The idea is that you get people to bless each other, and it goes something like, "May all the people that you work with appreciate you for the work that you do." And then the other person would say, and may they not only appreciate you, but may they support you in what you do. And then you say, and not just support me, but work along with me to help me work better and be more effective. And then they say, and may you find great joy in the moments of your working with people and feel great professional satisfaction. And the other, you get the idea?
Yes, yes. I can definitely see where this game might stretch or ask people to step outside their comfort zone.
Yeah. Well, but
not. Isn't it funny? I mean, it's just again, what I want people to hear is that this is a playful way to either end a meeting or to get creative.
Yes.
And it's, I think that for many people who work in, including myself, I fall into this trap, Bernie, is where I think I need a piece of equipment to engage people. You know, yeah. I it's not, but what I like about what you've shared so far is a question gets people into that playful, creative, inventive mindset. Even this, the endless blessings.
Yep. And the idea here is, of course, that it's not just a question, but you're setting this up as a game.
Yes.
And you're setting it up as this is something that we're just doing for fun, so that you're not going to be judged on the quality of your blessing.
Mm.
You're just going to be playing with it. And it's amazing that you can play with something that really is so profound and personal, and feel safe and free and excited, and you kind of wind up almost loving each other, you know, because everybody's saying such nice things to each other. So yeah, now I finished with my last slide here. It talks about two of my books, A Playful Path, which you can download for free. It's had over 100,000 downloads.
Wow.
At my website, aplayfulpath.com. And my other book called Deep Fun, my other site is called Deep Fun, which is, that's a very, very rich site. I've been working on that site for 20 years. So there's lots and lots of stuff. And I just rebuilt it. So it's a very effective, much prettier and much easier access to go through all those articles. And it has a list of games, which I don't know how many games there are, but it's really a big list. And all those games are, for the most part, games that are very responsive to playfulness. And there's also a book that I wrote called The Well-Played Game, which just got republished by MIT Press 35 years after it was first published. And it's a good exploration of the dynamics of playing the kind of way that I've been talking about.
Wow.
I am now finished. I don't want to talk to anybody. No.
Everyone. Oh, come on. Yeah. I'm going to warn you, I have one more question, but you don't need to answer it right now, because mostly I just want to get you to see if we have any quick questions from our group. But you did say the playful path is a spiritual path, and we've sort of danced around that. And I'm going to put that question out now as a seed, and maybe ask you to wrap up with your final thoughts right before we close with the sort of the spiritual nature of play and being playful. And I 100% concur. I think by what you're saying here. So I'm going to stop the share here and see if we have anybody who is would like to excuse me, share. And I'm going to take the mute off of everyone. So let's see what happens, Bernie. This could turn into a cacophony of noise, or it could be quiet like crickets. because I did get an email from my friend Scott, who said he was unable to see everyone else's chat. He could chat, he could write in the chat. I could see his chat, but not everyone else could.
I had the same problem.
Okay. I'm not sure what happened there. So with that said, I'm going to unmute everyone. So if you've got a lot of noise in the background, you might want to just mute your personal phone. And so let's see what happens.
Good stuff, guys. Good stuff. Bernie, as usual, that's Scott. Nice.
Hey, Scott. I want to see if there's anyone else out here who's got a question for Bernie as we wrap up. I realize we've got a couple more minutes.
Hey, I'm contending a certain property.
Hi, this is Sergio. I don't know if you can hear me. I had a question about something that was mentioned earlier. About people giving people permission to not participate in games. And I was thinking in a work environment. If we did a game in a work environment and we allowed people to get out, wouldn't that create division?
And we've got a bit of a feedback loop.
Well, I'm getting a lot of echo here.
Yeah, I'm going to turn off. Let's see, let me do
that. You might want to mute everybody again.
Okay, I have muted everyone again. Bernie, could you unmute yourself on the screen there? I think I can, maybe I can unmute you.
Give me a moment.
There we go. I got you. So, okay. Bernie, the caller asked about going back to this idea. I actually can see what that was an early question about. Sort of the practical, it seemed like a very practical question, which is, in a work environment, wouldn't the letting the people quit foster division in the team? Just this whole, I can see it if I'm playing games with my 11-year-old daughter, you know, and her friends, to allow them to just walk away. But what about in a work environment? How does that look?
Okay, so let me first of all, divide the work environment to the part of the work where you're doing team building to the other kind of work where you're pursuing a particular task together. In a team building environment, this is a beautiful way to work with people, to provide them with the opportunity to choose to engage or disengage. Or if that's too difficult for you, at least to provide them with alternative, with two different activities going on at the same time, so they have a sense of choice. In the work environment, the thing that you really need to do is to provide people with the opportunity to, that was the flow chart, to husband their energies, to direct themselves towards a flexible challenge so they can individually determine the degree of challenge that they want to face so they can stay involved. So they don't have to really quit. You're not really telling them that they can quit, but you're telling them to stay involved, but to watch your involvement, watch your degree of involvement, make sure that it involves you in the best way possible. If you feel that you're not engaged, do something to engage. Talk to somebody, walk someplace, take a break, whatever you have to do.
So this is, you know, it's interesting because when I look back or I think back, I don't have the book in front of me, but the book that are from the New Games,
yep.
And that was anything but divisive. It was on the complete other end of the spectrum, it appears to me, and my experience with playing those types of games. And yet you applied that same rule, sort of the law of 2 feet, right? That people could just leave the game.
Yes.
And yet, the end result was people felt connected and like they were one.
It's just like that slanted rope idea, you know? You give people the choice of how much involvement that they want, and they tend to actually involve themselves more because they have chosen it than if you had provided external incentives.
Well, we're at 7 minutes after the hour, and it looks like we could probably go for another hour or two. At least I could. I really enjoyed talking with you, Bernie. And I need to go pick up my daughter at some point from school today. So I'm wondering if we could end with this quote. I believe that I found this from a quote from you, Bernie, that you said, "The playful path is a spiritual path." What does that mean?
It means that it's an approach. It's an approach, like any spiritual path is. It's an approach to the world. It's an approach to your fellow man. It's an approach to how you perceive things. If you, I'm sorry about that phone. If you choose to respond playfully, if you can remember to respond playfully, then you are much, much more engaged in the world, like you would be if you were meditating or if you were practicing some kind of discipline of compassion. You are more attuned, you are more responsive to other individuals, to the environment, children teach us that, and that's you can watch or a dog, you know. That I think the first time I encountered the term playful path was in some science fiction story where the guy was like observing dogs because he thought that the dogs were really following that playful path. And it's so true, you know, when you watch a dog, they're always ready to play. And that's really a spiritual, to be always ready to play. That's like a discipline, especially for us as we grow older, when we start getting so worried about things, when life starts, you know, when we're having to fight off these different influences and ambitions and choose from so many different paths, and that we get too serious and we start isolating ourselves from each other and from the world. And the nice thing about playfulness is that it's this kind of spiritual path that complements any spiritual path. You can pray playfully. You can be compassionate playfully. You can pursue any walk of life playfully. And it becomes one that connects you more profoundly to the world, which is pretty much what all spiritual paths are about.
Well, Bernie, in preparation for this call today and reading over your material, you know, I've known about your work for a long time and finally had, I'm so glad to have had this opportunity for us to talk. But in my preparation, I can see that you truly walk your path and do what you teach others. So I would encourage everyone to get out over to Bernie's websites, and I'm going to list those off again here, and I'm going to post them at along with this recording when it's posted, but aplayfulpath.com, and then deepfun.com. And then Bernie also has a website, majorfun.com.
That's major all about fun. Games. Those are entertainment games, focusing
all,
on that.
All entertainment games, yeah. So this has been a delight, and I want to thank everybody for being here today. We've had, it looks like, people from all over the United States, and then also a few from outside the United States. So, my friend Larry Pearson, I see from Canada, and as saying hello, and then yeah, just folks from all over. It's what a delight, and I haven't done one of these in a while, Bernie, and I'm so thrilled to have had this opportunity to start launch off again with your help.
It was an honor, and I must tell you, I really enjoyed myself, I guess because I got to talk so much. I would have enjoyed myself a lot more if I could have participated with other people, but it was a pretty good compromise, I think.
Yeah, well, it's for what the technology that we have right now, we'll do with what we can. I'm sure it'll get better. Once we get the hologram of you, Bernie.
Yeah. No, let's have conferences. We'll do workshops. We'll play together. It'll be good.
I'm waiting for the scratch and sniff version of this. Well, thanks again. I want to thank everybody for being here today. The recording will be up soon, and I look forward to talking with you all again. Please head over to Bernie's websites. You can, and I'll post the recording up for everyone along with all the links, and then we'll also put the slide deck up so you can, if you missed the slides and you were only listening to the audio, that you'll be able to follow along there as well.
Also, I'm pretty responsive. There's contact forms on both websites, so if you have a question you want to ask me, just shoot it on over. I'll try to get back to you soon.
Great. Yes. Well, so this is Tom Heck with the International Association of Teamwork Facilitators, and thank you for sticking with us. We've had actually quite a great turnout today, close to 60 people from all over the place, and look forward to holding another one of these again soon. Thanks again, Bernie. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye, everybody.